Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
Now, a new movie out this weekend. It's called Father of the Cyborgs. It looks at the fascinating life and career of neuroscientist Dr. Phil Kennedy. In the late 1990s, he made global headlines for implanting several wire electrodes into the brain of a paralysed man and then taught the man himself, the locked-in patient, that is, to control a computer cursor with his mind. He was compared to Alexander Graham Bell in the Washington Post, and he became known as the Father of the Cyborgs, thus the title of the movie. Anyway, the Father of the Cyborgs is actually an Irishman from Limerick originally, and he joins me now to talk about this incredible new frontier in medicine and how he found himself at the forefront. So, Phil, good afternoon to you. Just, I'd like to go to the future first, if you like, because, you know, will human bodies be merged with or implanted with machines to the point that we will therefore become cyborgs if that is what we want?
That's a possibility, I agree. It's already happening, you know, with your cell phone, you can get a lot of information straight off the internet or straight off from the so-called cloud. So, yeah, I think we have to do it. And remember, there's a Ray Kurzweil, he says that intelligent robots will have human rights by now, he says, 2029, which is pretty close. And so we want to beat him at that. Try to stay human.
Right, indeed. Well, now, in staying human then, I mean, your experimental patients, if you like, they are the cyborgs. So the phrase, what it means to feel human again, is that sort of part of the reason why you open a door and walk through?
It is. Yes, it is. These people, you know, are intelligent, alert, they know what's going on, they can see, they can hear, they can do whatever, they can't move, and they can't speak. So they feel literally locked in. They might have an eye blink, yes, or a little grimace on their face, but we need to make them feel human again.
Okay, but like the idea of helping people with very severe disabilities is one of the primary motivations which started brain-computer interfaces, if you like, because there's no other options for these people.
Yeah, that's correct. Absolutely. It was the incentive was to try to help people feel human again, at least do something, to be able to spell out the computer like JR did. And we did lots of other things for them. But that was the motivation. And somebody had the analogy a long time ago that he wrote that if the human race is a dog and the tail of the dog are the people with disability and everybody else trying to help the tail, and eventually those devices that we've used for the help them with the tail are going to be used by sort of non-disabled people. So in that sense, initially the dog will wag his tail, but eventually the tail will wag the dog.
Okay, you've said J.R. We're talking about a Vietnam vet. He had something wrong with his brain.
He had a brainstem stroke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he didn't
okay.
Take his medications.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah. And in 1998, you put an electrode in his brain, and it is a bit of a scientific miracle, is it? I mean, is it something along the lines of, you know, Stephen Hawking and kind of the speech generating device? Same kind of breakthrough that you made.
Well, it's not a miracle, okay? That's
well, you know, I'm using that word. Isn't
I know.
It? Yeah.
But, he was very like Stephen Hawking's that they're both locked in. And Stephen Hawking, obviously, his hemispheres, the main part of his brain, remained intact. With JR, it was the brain stem that was stroked out. So the main parts of his brain did remain intact also. So it was similar in that way.
Paralyzed, he could control a computer using his brain. When I use the word control, what do I mean there?
Right. All he could do was use his brain signals to move the cursor in across the screen
right or left.
And down the screen.
Yeah.
Right, left, and vertically also. And so we put a keyboard on the screen, and he'd move the cursor over to stay on the letter, and he'd just stay on it, and the letter would pop up. So that's all he could do. Well, he did a few other things as well, but that's basically what we achieved with him. And I'll just tell you a little quick interesting thing that happened is we were there and having him spell out his name, and he would make some errors, and he'd do it again, he'd get better, he could spell his name. And at the end of that, we asked him, well, what are you thinking? Because remember, we implanted the arm-hand area of his brain. So we asked him to imagine moving his hand or his arm, and the signal is fired. So we asked him that day, well, what were you thinking? And he spelled out N-O-T-H-I-N-G, nothing. So we said, all right, we'll go home and think about this. So so we came the next day, and we came back, we asked him again. He said N-O-T-H-I-N-G. Turned out what he was thinking of was the cursor, of moving the cursor, not moving his hand or arm, but moving the actual cursor. Yeah. In our field, that's super important. It means that the brain had now was now related and controlled the cursor. It didn't bother worry about controlling the arm. So there is this plasticity in the brain. It can change. You can train the brain, if you like, to do things like that. And that was really amazing.
Well, then, by the way, we are talking to Dr. Phil Kennedy from Limerick. Father of the Cyborgs is the fascinating documentary that's out now and on release. Just on that note, I was going to ask you, like, if you're going to do all this, it would need to offer up what I would call some invaluable kind of data. Sounds like it did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. JR and others, and especially Eric, the last subject before me, when we were trying to restore speech, which we didn't succeed in doing, but we got enormous amount of data. And we were able to have him say a phoneme that's a building block of a word or a phrase, and we're able to decode those. In other words, we could recognize that there's a certain pattern of firing that's, you know, a certain pattern for one word, different pattern for another word. And that was hugely important. And also he can control the cursor and move it from one vowel to the next vowel.
Well, then, what about all the assistive technologies that have helped disabled people to move around, mm-hmm. manipulate objects, etc.? And, you know, severe paralyzed people, etc.
Right.
Isn't the big thing they say all the time that the ability to speak is their number one?
Yes. I spoke to a friend of mine at ALS. He died last year. And I asked him back in 2002 or three if I could restore his arm movement so he could type, or restore his speech, which would he prefer.
Yeah, right.
And he typed on the computer, speech, I gotta have speech.
Okay, right, two in one.
No doubt in his mind, yeah. No doubt at all.
Well, look, your life and your work brought you somewhere in around 2014, in June 2014, and you decided to experiment on yourself. So you went to Belize in 2014. Your family was pretty shocked. Some people thought, what are you up to? Don't be ridiculous, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And whatever happened to you there, you were nearly incapacitated for life, or possibly were anyway. And you kind of, we're talking here about optional experimental brain surgery. Now, there's not many people who would say, yeah, I'm up for that. No. Whatever about like going on and Elon Musk's thing off into the space or whatever, I'll do that one. But I'm not going to have optional experimental brain surgery, because that first word means I can say no.
Yeah, but everybody's afraid of brain surgery. But in the hands of a good neurosurgeon, it's safe. Of course, I took a lot of precautions before I went there and plunged into this. I made sure that I could, if I did lose my speech, that I'd be able to work a computer and do what Johnny Ray did and speak through the computer. So I took a lot of precautions. And I knew the surgeon, and I had watched him operate before. I was very confident in him. But then I lost my speech. Excuse me, for less than a week. Then it gradually came back, and I was back working in a month. I was a bit weak on one side. They did a CAT scan. It was just some swelling. Again, they gave me treatment. I knew that would go down. So I wasn't depressed about it. Obviously, I was a bit anxious at the time. I couldn't speak or write.
Were you now? Like, okay, fair enough. But I mean, like, there was the thought that the surgeon had damaged you for life.
No.
Well, no? Are you sure?
No.
I mean, after a day or two, you had a seizure. Phrases and sentences were coming out all kind of weird. You kind of lost the glue that keeps all that together. And, like, you know, somebody might have been confident that it was going to come back, but it may not have come back.
Well, see, I developed the surgery in rats and monkeys and then humans. So I knew I knew the complications. I knew what would come back. I wasn't a bit afraid of that. And the seizure was just a local seizure in my jaw. And when I found that my jaw was having a short seizure like that, sure, they gave me medication, but I was really glad, because then I knew that they had implanted the correct place in my brain.
Okay, but I mean, like, even though it's not as sort of crazy, like, it's not rocket science, it's only brain surgery or whatever you more or less said a minute ago. We do all love the story of a maverick, but this is straight out of Star Trek for a lot of people, or straight out of something like that, whatever. It really is, isn't it? I mean, like, I mentioned something earlier, a current scientific thing, is it current scientific experiments thing, or is this reality that we're talking about now in terms of what happened to you 6 or 7 years ago and what can happen into the future?
Yes, I believe that, like other people in the field, believe that people will get an implant. If you listen to Elon Musk, it's going to be really simple, which, I mean, a bit of an exaggeration, but people will get an implant. And the advantage of the technique I use, the electro I use, is that it endures for, well, over a decade in Eric, our last patient, second last patient. So we have advantages in the electrode. We don't have the advantage in his money, but that's another issue.
And just to go back to you and what you did 6 or 7 years ago, I presume there were a lot of people who thought that really you were crazy, that you're doing the wrong thing, that you shouldn't be doing this. Yeah. And not just your family, but other people in the medical profession as well.
Yes, there were. But I wasn't going to listen to them. I had a question to ask. I needed the answer to it. And so this is the only way. I couldn't ask somebody else to do what I did.
Okay. like, what if, is there a question here that if everybody could connect to the internet through their mind, is it a question like, what if we use computers for memory and reserve more space from in the more agile brains, if you like, for processing information and understanding it? We could all have all that stuff over there.
Yeah, well, that's already happening.
Is it?
Well, I mean, look at people with a cell phone. Do you remember your people's phone numbers? Well, you remember their name or something, or a button to push. Do you, if you need some information, we have a thing, a system called Siri. You can ask a question, it'll bring up the information. So we're already using the phones as our memory banks. And that's enhanced us as regards memory, but I'm not sure if it makes us any wiser.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'd agree with you there. I certainly agree with the question that should be asked. The imaginary, the stuff that you have in the movie, that's used in the movie, which is brilliantly put together with David Burke.
Yes.
And like, by the way, you don't need prior knowledge of this kind of science necessary to understand the breakthroughs and the whole thing of what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. But like, the stuff that's used is freshly shot, and then there's archive footage as well. The lobotomies of the 1930s and et cetera and onwards. Do you look upon them as though, well, you know, like shock therapy, lobotomies, maybe it's not, they're not all bad people who did these things. But at the same time, you look at it here and you go, what? It has a bad reputation then. Yeah. And it has a bad reputation today. It hasn't changed.
It has. But let me say a few things. ECT can still be used in refractory depression, but their new medication is coming out for that, so that'll drop off probably. And ECT is different than what it was because the patient is anesthetized. Okay, the other thing is that I once met a patient who had a lobotomy, and she seemed perfectly fine. And she said, yes, I had voices in my head, and when I had the lobotomy, the voices disappeared, and I've lived a full life. She got married, she has kids, and she's working. And so they're not all bad. But most of them were terrible, and most of going up underneath your eye into your brain and putting in a knitting needle to lesion your brain. That was terrible.
So that was nothing like what happened to you in Belize 6 years ago.
Sir. No,
okay, fair enough. Okay, we are talking, by the way, to Dr. Phil Kennedy, a renowned neurologist and brain-computer interface pioneer. The ethical boundaries of this. Like you mentioned Elon Musk earlier on, if he took charge, it would be the exact opposite to the reason why you want to do it. You want to advance human everything, and you want to do it for science and everything else. He would not necessarily, or somebody like him might not necessarily want to do that. That mightn't be a bad thing if he's going to throw like 20 trillion into it. It could move things on a bit quicker.
I don't want to say that about Elon Musk. I know what you're saying. If people got a hold of it who wanted to have a, you know, some governments would love to get this technology and have an army of superhumans. I know, I got all that. But the only way around that, I thought about this a lot. The only way around it is make it available for everybody.
Yeah.
All right? And bring the cost down. And like people say, well, my cell phone 20 years ago was a big thing. It was expensive. Now, most people have a cell phone and the cost has come down, so it's affordable. And I think it'll be the same way.
Okay, and like the only practical way forward for you, as you say yourself, was to experiment on yourself. You were the kind of, I don't know, mm-hmm. the best thing to get, if you like. So, and DEA approval and all these kind of, whatever you call it, the stuff
FDA.
In America. Yeah, the FDA approval, yeah, DEA. Okay, so was it worth the risk would be the big question. I mean, like everybody would say, you know, they'd have to ask you that. You know, I presume it came with some reputational cost as well, to an extent, but also praise as well. But
sure,
it was completely worth it, was it?
Yeah, absolutely. I got my answer. I know how to decode silent speech. That's what I set out to do.
Okay.
And the reason for that is I couldn't do it with the previous patient with Eric. And the reason I could do it is that I had a different paradigm, and I could speak and not speak, and I had a control period. And we decoded the speech in the speech time, at the audible speech, and then in the silent speech, and compared that to the control period, and there was statistically significant difference between them. So it wasn't just noise that we were decoding, it was real speech.
Well, when you mentioned Eric Ramsey, what did you learn from and what did you do with him?
Well, as I was saying, we did decode, we'd have him repeat a word or a phrase or a phoneme, and we were able to decode those. We actually decoded about half the phonemes in the English language. There are 39. We decoded about 23 with different strengths and different probabilities. Okay, we also had that part, and then we had the part where he was able to control the cursor, move it around the screen from one vowel to the next vowel. Like the computer would say E, and he'd have to move it from an area called U up to E, and he was able to do that. And that was, when we saw that, we were really happy. I think that's in the documentary too.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And yeah. Also, you know, you've said before that scientists have to be individuals. This is going back to 2014. And Belize, you're on your own here, Sonny. You can't do science by committee. Is that the way you see it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's good to have committees and collaborators. I'm all on for that. But the actual breakthroughs have to be, I believe, from an individual who thinks deeply about it and says, okay, this is the way it's got to be. And then you try it out, you fail a bit, you try again, you refine it, and it works out.
Okay. Now, just a couple of more things I want to mention here. The Spanish neuroscientist at Yale University, Jose Delgado, he said in 1970, he told the New York Times, it's 50 years ago now, more than 50 years ago now, the human race is at an evolutionary turning point. We are very close to having the power to construct our own mental functions. So, like, what's happened? Like, isn't there an awful lot of stuff of you're just about there, and actually it takes years and years and years, much longer than people think. The question is, what sort of humans would we like, ideally, to construct?
Good humans. People who are aware of each other around and use new technologies to help all of us and not just be selfish about it or try to have some power kick about it. That would be wrong. And I'm afraid I'm pessimistic about the world right now and what I see going on. I see the authoritarian governments that are there now. Yeah. It's really serious, and people just have to say no. We want to elect a government that's responsible to the people, where you can have an election. I don't want to go into the politics of it, but there is a danger that it'll go the other way. So we all have to, as scientists, we have to speak up and not let people take advantage of our science.
Well, when you came up with the neurotropic electrode, you quit your academic post at Georgia Tech and you started a biotech company then. And then, you know, after Johnny Ray, you mentioned earlier on, you looked at everything. And I presume it's like it's brain-computer interface that flowed as smoothly as a healthy person's speech as part of the whole thing. So all of this stuff, where does that go back to Limerick? Where did you study? Where did you grow up?
I grew up basically in Limerick, but then I studied in Dublin. So I did my medical training in Dublin and then some more extensive training. Then I went to Canada and did some more neurosurgery, and then I started my research career there. I mean, I was schooled by the Jesuits, who do make you think. I mean, we can run down the good old Catholic Church, but they do make you think. That's a great thing.
That's a great thing. Well, it certainly was a great thing from your point of view. All right, Dr. Phil Kennedy, it is Father of the Cyborgs, and the movie is out now this weekend. But just one last thing. Our mental states, will they be shared, and will data be mined one day soon? And you're not necessarily too worried about all of that in some ways.
I mean, like when I mentioned, I am.
Oh, are you? Oh, okay. You kind of vaguely hit on the evil side of it, like concerned that your work could be used for evil. And every second movie is the evil side of it all. And the other movies is about the Star Trek side of it all or whatever. But like the serious side here, are you worried about that yet?
Yeah, it's already happening. People take our data, you know. Yeah. I'll give you an example. You go to look at something on the internet and you're checking out whatever. And then, you know, at half a day or a day later, you have ads, advertising.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're data mining us like crazy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're already doing it. I think it's okay if it's just that. I mean, if you're trying to buy a computer and suddenly there's an ad for 10 different ones, or that's okay. But it can easily go beyond that. And if they can, I don't think they can access our thoughts. I don't think that will really happen, because all we do is record. So we're just recording our brain signals and using them to do something else, like speech or movement or something. But thoughts, that's a whole different ballgame. I don't think technology will.
Okay. And the celebrity that came with what you did in 1999, I mean, it was huge, like an American television chat shows lining up and all the, you know, you became an absolute cause celebre, whatever the phrase is. And it was, did you, Did you think you used it well in terms of getting like another few rungs up the ladder to get this stuff across?
Yes, we did. Actually, we put in a grant proposal for more than they normally should ask. And I reread the comments on the proposal some years later and realized, oh my goodness, why do they fund that? Look at this nonsense. They did.
But we have to fund it. It's Dr. Phil Kennedy, for God's sake. Give him the money.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that, all right. It was fine. I got the
Absolutely.
Money. Now the money's vanished because I'm sort of persona non grata, I guess.
Well, so finally, like, what's the future then, past, like, into 2022 onwards? Up to this 2029, by the way, that you mentioned.
Well, I'm self-funding the research right now, but we've several different ways. We started the Silent Speech Foundation. We have NeuroSignal is actually a C corporation. There's stock. People can buy the stock and put money in. I'm putting some personal money in. We have patents, which are valuable. So we have a lot of value in the company itself. And so the book, the Unlocking Eric, which is a freedom journey to restore the speech of those who are locked in,
right.
Sales of that will help our funding as well. But the problem is we're trying to not do basic research now. That's done. We're trying to develop into a product to help people. So we're trying to get out there.
Okay, well, people have to get a look at the movie because it's great. It's called Father of the Cyborgs. It's out now. Dr. Phil Kennedy, it's been a real pleasure. Congratulations and onwards and upwards.
Thank you very much.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.